For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good evening, bodhisattvas. Dharma beacons. Beep, bing, bing. Happy solstice. Thank you for coming here on the longest day of this year, allegedly. So much light in such dark times. So over 25 years ago, on kind of environmental situations such as this, long summer day, nights, bright, I noticed simple acts of kindness and presence and openness performed by an unassuming Zen priest. And I thought to myself, I'd kind of like to be like that. Maybe that's, I'd like to learn that way of peace and love. So that sort of drew me in to this Zen practice of sitting. The world was troubled then. And from my earliest of memories, I was troubled by that trouble. Economic injustice, oppression that seemed to be based on difference in appearances, such as skin color or sexuality or gender, nationality, micro and macro violence, weapons of mass destruction. Those that bothered me even as a child, I remember. And I'm still very sad to say that times are still hard and we're plagued apparently by the same problems. I kind of was hoping with Zen practice that things would get better, but I find that it even impacts me more. The truth of suffering, especially after the horrendous events in Orlando last week, when our brothers and sisters and queer-identifying siblings were violently gunned down. Yet, all systems go? Okay. Yet I sense that all of us are here today because somehow we have that same desire to heal and to support the well-being of the world. That's really what brings us together on some deep, deep level. And despite this, you know, apparent endlessness of pain and suffering and difficulty, our Buddhist practice is not to turn away from the cries of the world, but to direct compassion towards all beings without exception. This great bodhisattva practice is actually to consider each being without exception as a brother or sister or mother or child or loved one. You know, in the Metta Sutta that we chanted today, right? There's that image of a mother and her child, that kind of care. And also, there's a little clause in bodhisattva practice that is without exception. So that even means to include the harmed and those who harm. And sometimes it's easy to forget that clause. I forget it. Actually, I forget many things about practice on a regular basis. You know, there's these vows, I vow to save all beings, or the bodhisattva precepts some of us have taken on. Or even just to sit upright, you know, sometimes I find myself like this, then like this, you know. So there's this constant forgetting. I've often thought it's some kind of karmic amnesia, you know. Maybe on my part it's just early dementia, I'm not sure. But I notice that I still turn away from things that aren't comfortable. And I still want to grab on to things that appear to be alluring or pleasing. And sometimes I just zone out. And there's a sense that there's an evaporation of this aspiration for peace and love. It just kind of vanishes. I don't know if that ever happens to you. You probably remember this all the time, but if you've got a secret, let me know. But recently when my practice was lagging, I received some instructions about practicing peace and love from a Zen master, Zen teacher named Tenshin Reb Anderson. And I'd like to share these with you. These little instructions that I've found helpful to help me ground myself in practice. They're simple, and I feel profound, and that they are supportive of this kind of awareness that maybe gives us just the tiniest shred of a chance of realizing peace in our time. So this is what I remember hearing. And I apologize to Reb if I misquote. But he recommended four things. Listening to the teaching of thusness. Remembering the teaching of thusness. Practicing the teaching of thusness. And transmitting the teaching of thusness. So that's kind of easy. What's the first one?
Listen.
Listen. Not just with your ears, though. With your hands. You know? With your eyes. With your tongue. With your body. With this other sense organ we have called the mind. Thank you. Excuse me. So, what's the second now? Remember. So remember the teaching. Third one? Practice. Good. Very good. Fourth one. Yep. No cheating. Okay. So, listening, remembering, practicing, transmitting. And without being too technical, I will say, and I'm not going to attribute this to Reb, so I'll just say listen, remember, practice, transmit. You know, that's all I'm sort of conveying from him. Everything else I'm totally responsible for. The teaching of thusness can be thought of as a kind of tenderness. A tenderness of the way things are, the intimacy of life, of all things, how we're all together, working together without exception. You know, rocks, trees, walls, pebbles, tiles, murderers, murdered, guns, peace flags, all, everything. That's always the truth of our experience. And there's a kind of deep interconnectedness. You know, one practice I have is when I hear about, sorry about this, is when I hear of something really horrendous happening, I think to myself, where is the violence that I have inside of myself? So there's a tendency to want to have this polarity, like I'm good and that person is bad. I'm not condoning those actions whatsoever, saying that they're things that I want to engage in. But if I look deep in myself and practice, there's a lot of stuff tangled up in there. And there's a tentativeness of not knowing. So really, I think that all of Buddha's teaching is just an offering to help us realize peace and love. And the way that works is maybe to support patience and stability. So like sitting zazen, we're kind of training ourselves to remain upright when this tsunami of pain is like, you know, like a thunderbolt is thrown at us. How to bear that and not act in a way that contributes to more problems. And to be able to stand the ungraspability of our intimate closeness, to be able to bear that, like we can't hold on to it. Everything we love is going to disappear. So is everything we hate, which I find comforting. But, you know, to rest in kind of a not knowing and still have to act and support to the best of our ability what this open, tender heart directs us towards. And this is actually going beyond Buddha, like you hear these phrases. We go beyond ourselves, whatever happened or occurred in the world. With each action we take, there's so much like courage in doing that. So we have this help back to listening to teachings. We don't know what we're doing, but maybe these teachings sink in on some level when we listen with our whole bodies and minds. Like often think like Buddha's teaching, and Buddha's teaching comes in all sorts of different kinds of packets. You know, sometimes they're called sutras, but they might be just the fact that our most recent Shuso was able to help me with this microphone. Such a lovely thing. But how we... So these teachings can sort of permeate us through this repetition, listening, remembering, practicing, and then giving it away, you know, transmitting. You know, there's this kind of thing in Zen that like only somebody with Dharma transmission is like transmitting. But actually, I feel like that's not exactly right. Like you're all like bing, 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 bing. You're all transmitting this intimacy. Buddha's way. We're all doing this together all the time. But due to delusions and problems we have, we don't see it even. And then things can get out of control. So one way I've spoke about listening was actually through all of our sense organs. You know, absorbing that. There's a line somewhere in Dogen, it might be in Uji or one of the fascicles, that says, the entire universe is the true human body. You know, and I don't know about the entire universe, but I've been kind of shocked, like, to find out about the human biome, that so much of us are cells that are allegedly non-human cells, like bacteria and fungus and all this stuff running. You know, like I'm realizing I'm not just like this body, but I'm just like one big giant glob of bunch of organisms, you know. And that's just what my tiny, tiny little human consciousness begins to even understand. But it goes further. That intimacy of how closely we are dependent on so many things. So this is part of listening, is being able to listen to that. One of my favorite lines of listening, which I quote often, is the introductory verses, incantation kind of homage that begins the Prajnaparamita, the Heart Sutra, one of the versions. And it goes like this. Call forth as much as you can of love, of respect, and faith. Remove all the obstructing defilements and clear away all of your taints. Listen to the perfect wisdom of the gentle Buddhas, taught for the weal of the world, for heroic spirits intended. So this is the attitude of listening. Just letting go of anything that is getting in the way, let's say. And listen to this teaching of the gentle Buddhas, taught for the weal. And weal, like W-E-A-L, it's interesting because like you think of weal as a wound, but it's well-being of the world. And, you know, I think that's something that we could really use. The world needs wishes for its well-being and actions to its well-being. So then when you listen with sort of an attitude like this, then we can remember. And I like the idea of remembering the teaching. Remember to return to the home base of intimacy, the teaching of thusness, which is that we're not separate. And remembering, you might even remember that there's a word that some of you may know called mindfulness. You might have heard of that famous Buddhist word. Sati, as in Satipatthana Sutta, for all you Buddhist eggheads in the room. That root sati and smriti is to remember, to recall. You know. And there's lots of things you can start to recall. You can be like, maybe I'll recall the precepts today. Or maybe I will recall the factors of awakening, such as, this is my great teacher today, mindfulness, investigation of the Dharma, energy, joy, things that support. You could say the paramitas, like generosity or patience. Meditation even is in that mix. But there, you can just pick things out to start to recall teachings of Buddha, to remember. Practicing is the next order of business. So you can check yourself. It's like if I think, oh, maybe I'm forgetting something. Let me check. Am I practicing kindness and compassion? How do my actions of body and speech line up? You know, normally or under many conditions, we think of zazen, this upright sitting, quiet, facing the wall, as practice. But I think zazen is something that's like, well, Teigen has this great little article, and it's called zazen, something like zazen is a ritual enactment of awakening. So we take this bodily position, you know, and we're kind of practicing being awake in this upright position. But actually, zazen, as far as I can tell, and I don't really know what it is, but it seems to be a little bit more than just seated meditation. That's all I can say, that it can start to move along. But, you know, you can practice zazen facing the wall, too. But I often try to think, am I still practicing Zazen when I'm driving my car or when some lightning bolt of bad news comes across my iPhone when I'm reading the New York Times? I'm like, oh man, not again. Oh, wait, am I practicing uprightness with this? The worst thing, of course, is I can't know, but at least we have some things, the precepts and the paramitas and some of these other like Buddhist teachings can help us check a little bit just to see if that's what's happening. And, you know, number four, transmitting. This is this offering. You know, I don't know if you realize this, but like every time we do service, like when I go up there and light that incense, like what is she doing, you know, smoking up the place? But actually, I go up there and I'm like, I'm offering the benefit of our practice for the welfare of all beings, for the welfare of the universe. And I'm actually, that's what I'm thinking, but it's really on behalf of all of us and everybody in the world. And, you know, we do these things, these, you know, may the merit of this, blah, blah, blah. You know, we all, whenever we're saying that, we're giving away, we're transmitting, we're offering. We're letting go of grasping on to anything we have and just falling into this giving. I sometimes think of that, you know, when I say like Dharma beacons, you know, there's this image that you all know of, which I think of as sort of illustrative of transmitting or offering or conveying peace and love, let's say. And there's this image of the net of Indra, which I think some of you, you've all heard of the net of Indra. I know Douglas has. Anybody else? Hakusho has. So let me talk a little bit about the net of Indra. So it's just this image, right, of this net of interconnected jewels. So this is like the Buddhist idea of how we really are, this kind of intense connectedness. And each one of us is a jewel that's reflecting all the other jewels, but without exception, right? So like we're reflecting everything in everybody. That really makes hatred a bad idea, I think. You know, when you really start to get into that, it's sort of like, well, wait a minute, but I'm reflecting and I am you and you are me and all that stuff, you know. So there's something about Buddha's teaching that, you know, we all are trying to remind each other, you know, pinging each other to remind us of this tenderness and connectedness that we have. I also think of it as blessing. You know, part of the way in which we're conveying our practice, the fruits of our practice, is this blessing of each other. That may sound really weird or, I don't know, Christian or something, but I don't think anybody has a market on blessing. You don't even have to be a Buddhist to, you know, wish well and honor the dignity of whatever we're up to. So, you know, Shakyamuni Buddha was this, I want to say, you know, kind of like a tough guy. You know, like he went through these ascetic practices for years, you know, being super skinny from not eating, didn't breathe for a while, you know, attained all these kind of like self-flagellating induced states of consciousness, and then finally sat under the Bodhi tree, strong sitting, and became awakened, you know. But the Buddha of the future, and I associate that kind of awakening of Shakyamuni with awareness and wisdom. But the Buddha of the future is Maitreya Buddha. That's supposed to be the next Buddha who's waiting around inside this little box. But Maitreya, who's kind of also like, I don't know, in this picture, this must be like some Tibetan thing because it's like really glorious. But, you know, Maitreya's name is like the kind one, the loving one. And I've been feeling more and more that that's the trajectory of Buddhism in America. What we're up to is to find some way in the midst of these hard times to listen to Maitreya's teaching, you know, to remember it, to practice it, and then to offer it in some way. And, yeah, to bless the world in some way. And all beings without exception, even those who are in such pain they commit terrible crimes beyond our imagination. So, I think I'd like to kind of hear your thoughts on this issue and kind of what do you remember? What do you listen to? You know, what have you heard in practice? And what are you, how are you receiving this? So, bodhisattvas, bring it on. Share your stuff.